So we're making better decisions, and the fruit quality should even be better on this next go around.
In the present, I need to evolve, I need to change lots of things.
Okay, I think a few times they asked me, Giovanni, do you have fun in what you're doing?
Well, you reinvent yourself, right? I think that's really where that begins and ends.
I think 18's legendary. It's going to go down in history.
I haven't made the same wine twice, have no intention of duplicating anything.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 348. This week we feature Martin Burnell Hafner of Topel Winery in Hopland, California.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
During the rainy vintage of 2011, we visited Mark Topel, owner of Topel Winery in Hopland, California, and featured him in podcast number 47. Hopland is located 2 hours north of San Francisco in Mendocino County, where Mark was making some magnificent wines. Topel was sold when Mark retired, and now the new winemaker is Martin Burnell Hafner. Martin's experience makes him a good choice to take up the reins at Topel Winery. We met with Martin at his home in Geyserville to talk about the future of Topel, which is very bright indeed. You can hear Martin on our Vino Lingo segment defining the wine term complexity. So today we're here with Martin Burnell Hafner. I want to make sure I pronounce that right.
That's correct.
Good. And Martin is a winemaker at Topel Winery, which is in Hopland. Mm-hmm. But we're not in Hopland. We're in a place somewhere in the country where he lives. So we won't tell people exactly where he's at, so don't go pounding on your door for wine.
Nearby.
Yeah, nearby, exactly. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, yeah. Very excited to be here with you.
It's exciting to talk to you because we go back to 2011 with Topel when we interviewed Mark. And unfortunately, Mark is no longer owner of the winery, or fortunately, depending how you look at it.
Yeah, no, basically, I'm taking the baton from him in a way. He retired due to some health issues, but I'm really excited to work with his legacy. Tasting through his wines since I think the earliest one I've tasted is 2004. Fantastic, especially the Cabernets. I've been really impressed, and some of the people that I've tasted with have been really impressed by our library of wines. It's going to be challenging not having him around, but exciting at the same time work with the property, with our estate, which is absolutely amazing, which I think you saw last time. So yeah, it's going to be hard to continue to take the baton from him, but very exciting.
So what was your first vintage, your first pick?
My first vintage is actually 2011.
There you go.
There you go.
I just missed you.
Just missed me, but it was in France. So my first vintage was at Chapoutier in the Rhone Valley. I was expecting to actually go to Bordeaux, but the winemaker who I was going to work with ended up getting a job at Chapoutier, which at the time I didn't know much about, but later found out it was an amazing place to work, maybe even better than being in Bordeaux. So we headed off there with my wife, and we both worked a harvest at Chapoutier, which was incredible for a number of reasons, for working with absolutely world-class fruit, and also we got to live with the winemaker, his wife, and his family. So we got an all-encompassing French experience. His wife was an amazing chef, almost, basically. So every night was we were greeted by amazing food with incredible wine. So
how long were you there?
We were in the internship itself was 2 months. And then we traveled around Europe for another 2 months.
It's kind of a silly question. Was it really hard for you to leave?
It wasn't. It wasn't. Basically, there's something freeing about not having to be anywhere. And if you wanted to go to the next town over and explore you know, a Kalank or explore a new winery, that was very freeing. But at the same time, living out of your suitcase gets old, and food is not as well when you're on a budget. So we were eating a little bit of cheese and ham, ham and cheese rolls that we prepared in the car, and yogurt a lot of times because we were on a tight budget.
Sure, sure. But that, when you're young, it's fun to do stuff like that.
Absolutely.
You don't appreciate it until you get older.
Exactly. But we did have plenty of good wine because we got paid in wine. So we ended up with like 5 cases of incredible wine that we just drank as we went along, shared with people.
Do you still have some of that?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
We brought back, I think, almost 2 cases in our suitcases.
Nice. Wow, that's a challenge, isn't it?
It is.
A couple of bottles is hard, let alone that.
We learned very well how to pack wine. So
yeah, no clothes, just wine. I don't need these jeans. I'll just throw them away.
No, we had very nice people at the airport that somehow ignored our overweight bags.
There are people like that that exist that are very good people.
No, we were fortunate. So,
well, that's very cool. So, how did your road lead to Topel?
So basically, I did a harvest in France. I come from a finance background, so I didn't study enology in college. And working in France totally changed my perspective about what I wanted to do in the future. My wife was kind of the one I was driven towards wine. And once I fell in love with working in a cellar, basically, and in a winery setting, I decided that I wanted to do it for a living. So then traveled to Mendoza, worked another harvest under Paul Hobbs at his winery, Vina Cobos. And then I really enjoyed working with Paul, very meticulous winemaker, making tremendous wine. So I came back to California and did another internship at his winery here in Sebastopol, Flagship Winery, and then stayed with on with Paul Hobbs for almost 7 years. Wow. So did everything from cellar rat to lab tech, enologist, the whole gamut basically there, until I really wanted to do something else, learn different styles, work with other appellations. And I had just applied for a blind posting, small vineyard. I wanted to be really hands-on and do a variety of tasks. So saw this posting, sounded really interesting, met the owner, met the sort of, there's a transition winemaker between Mark and myself. And just, I went up there, love the site. It's really a special place when you get up there, just the exposure, the soils, the views, and you can just tell the vines are in perfect balance, which it's hard because in a lot of places you see overvigorous vines, especially in that area. But just I think the soils and the exposure really bring everything into balance up there. It's at 1,400 feet. So it's a really special place. That's what really drew me the most, was the land.
Yeah, Mark was a very meticulous guy himself, and a great guy, and very frank, again, for our listeners to go back and listen to that podcast. He was a lawyer himself, and just integrated himself into the land so much. That's a tough act to follow when you've got a brand that's already established.
So yeah, Mark was a great winemaker. He really understood his property, his land. I'm very excited to continue that legacy, and I'm fortunate to be taking that on, and I have an idea from tasting his wines of what he did and what it takes. I've worked with Paul for 7 years. I know how to make great wines in the cellar. It's just having that piece of land, the terroir, which is amazing up there, that I think will allow us to continue that legacy that Mark had built.
He did a great job. And how many acres are you farming there?
We're farming 15 acres. About 75% of it is Cabernet.
A lot of it's hillside, as I recall, right?
All of it is hillside, pretty much, yeah. There's block one is the flattest of all, but it's really not flat. Everything else is on, and we have slopes facing each basically cardinal direction you can think of. And so, yeah, it's tremendous.
It's a challenging piece of property from what I remember.
Absolutely. There's nothing, we don't even use tractors. We can't use tractors. Everything's on 4x5s or 5x5s. So everything's done by hand. I have two full-time vineyard guys working pretty much 5-6 days a week. And sometimes we have to bring in help because it's strenuous farming. Basically, when we do our pruning, we have to come afterwards and pick up all our prunings by hand, pull them out. So yeah, it's very strenuous, but at the same time, it allows us to learn the vineyard. We know every vine, every area. Basically, we have to, little things like irrigation. You know, someone can irrigate a whole block. Well, most of our blocks have to be divided in sections because of the different slopes. And there's different vigors. So we really pay attention to, basically, we fillet our vineyards. We understand exactly what's happening in every section of the vineyard, because otherwise we couldn't farm quality fruit.
Sure. Well, to go back to my visit a few years ago, as I recall, Hopland is just south of Ukiah for people who are trying to find a landmark.
It's 30 minutes north of Geyserville, about 30 minutes south of Ukiah. So we're straddled right in between those two sites. It honestly is 20 minutes from Geyserville on the highway, but then, of course, we were on a dirt road, so it's about 10 minutes up the hill.
Oh, I remember that.
Yes.
Oh, yes, I remember
that. Which makes it challenging in many ways, not just farming, but the logistics aside, you know, for winemaking.
Well, this is probably a goofy question, but I've run into this with some of the winemakers in Sonoma specifically, but do you have any issues with wild pigs out in your vineyard at all?
Not yet. We have a couple deer, a lot of turkey that live in a canyon, so our block 6, which is mostly Merlot, gets definitely attacked by turkeys frequently. But we've learned to, I think it's a pretty balanced ecosystem, so I think there's a lot of predators. There's really not many vineyards up there. I think we may be the only one up that high. So, yeah, I think we live in a balanced ecosystem that keeps everything in check.
It's a beautiful area just to go there and see it. I've talked to a lot of winemakers about issues with labor, especially over the last few years, and, of course, what's going on with immigration. How about you guys? Any problems for you?
We were fortunate that the two vineyard guys that we have, Ricardo, he's been with us for 18 years, and Osvaldo has been with us for 3 years. We haven't had labor issues in that sense, but I could see if one of them decided to move on, it would be tough to find someone new, especially in that area because there's a lot of vineyards. We're somewhat remote, so there's a premium for labor. And also with the cannabis industry now, I think there's a lot of competition there as well.
Well, I think the other thing, while this is remote, not unusual for wineries, it's also that you guys are farming some really incredible fruit there.
Absolutely, yeah.
You hear everybody talk about places, you know, Napa and Sonoma proper, and it's like, no, pay attention. And this is what Mark was talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Mendocino is the next frontier after Sonoma. I don't know who can buy land in Napa and Sonoma now and make a living from a winery. So I think Mendocino is going to attract a lot younger winemakers. It's kind of the next generation of pioneers that are going to make great wines that are of value to the consumer. Because if you buy in Napa $250,000 an acre, how much are you going to have to sell your bottle for?
A lot.
So Mendocino, I think, is the next frontier in that sense. And our climate is basically the same as St. Helena. Our soils are pretty incredible, so I don't see why the quality could be any different in a way.
The big difference is from what I recall, again, there really isn't much flatland up there.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it makes farming that much more of a challenge, and also to a degree, to pay off the price, a little bit more expensive.
Exactly.
You'll never be doing a mechanical harvesting up here.
No, there's no way. Yeah. You can barely get a tractor in.
Yeah,
so.
Unless they make drone farming.
Yes. I've thought about asking, there's small vines here in Sebastopol. They have interesting farm equipment that we could use in some of our blocks, but I highly doubt it. Just the slopes are too hard.
So we're approaching the 2019 vintage here. So Martin, you're brand new to the winery, and this is going to be your first vintage.
Exactly.
2019, what's it looking like?
I think it's going to be a fantastic vintage. Mostly because the summer, we've had a pretty gentle summer. So that's really allowed us to basically bring the vines into balance. We've done the shoot positioning, leafing, everything's kind of, we've been on time. And also it allows for balance. Basically, you know, the accumulation of sugars are come in balance with the tannins and color. So far it looks like a great vintage. I don't know what the latter part of the summer will hold, but I have my fingers crossed if it continues this way that it's going to be a great vintage. It's probably going to be later than other vintages because we had a late start with the rains in May, and it was really a cold spring. So, but I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited.
Good. I know a couple winemakers I've talked to already have said the exact same thing, and a couple of you have been said 18 they feel was one of the best vintages that they'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, this is going to be pretty darned exciting. I mean, you've done this. You've been down these paths already as a winemaker,
mm-hmm.
and working in various positions, but this is your baby now, really.
It is. It's a pretty unique opportunity because we're small enough that I literally do everything. So I am managing the vineyard. When the grapes come in, I'll make all the winemaking decisions. And on the other end, I'll also be doing sales. So literally doing everything.
You look like you're saying, come on.
Yeah. So no, but it's really a unique opportunity because in my previous positions, I haven't had as much exposure to consumers. So it's hard when you don't hear that feedback and hear what people really enjoy, what people are looking for in your wine. And I think that sometimes winemakers can miss that if they're removed from the market. So just from the time that I've been here, hosting some people up there at the property, doing some barrel tastings, it's funny, but customers have given me ideas. You know, maybe you should bottle, we have a little barrel of Petit Syrah. It's like, oh, maybe you should bottle this. This is amazing. I was like, okay, if people are asking for it, yeah, that's true. I was going to blend it with the Cabernet, but...
I'm glad to hear that because I love Petit Syrah.
Exactly.
I'm a big fan. Where do you do tasting for the wines?
So right now, it's basically just at our winery. That's where we tell our customers, come visit me. And basically, I can come meet you anytime unless I'm out on the market or maybe right in the middle of crush. But I welcome everyone to come up. Or also, we are actually at Locals Taste Room here in Geyserville. It's a co-op tasting room, basically, of 10 different local wineries. They're all family-owned, mostly connected to Alexander Valley or Southern Mendocino County.
So you're doing the tastings yourself, pretty much.
I'm doing the tasting myself, so. Okay.
This is what I was leading up to, is as a winemaker, And again, with your years of experience now, what do you find when it comes to educating people who don't know a ton about wine, or maybe, you know, I don't drink whites or I don't drink reds? I mean, how do you get past things like that? Because you are the experienced guy, and that can pose an interesting challenge.
Absolutely. I just always tell people, no matter what, taste your palate. I don't get offended if I'm tasting with someone and they don't particularly seem to like one of my lots. I just, because sometimes it is my favorite lot. That's what I've learned in the wine industry. I try not to alienate anyone's palate because that's what they're used to. You know, if you like big Cabernets, that's what you like. And if you like lighter, kind of cooler climate Cabernets, that's what you like too. They're very different, but there's no right answer. And I think that makes the wine industry exciting because if everything tasted the same, then it wouldn't be exciting at all. It'd be one brand.
Yeah, boring, exactly.
So I think it makes it exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever run into anything that's been almost an insurmountable question as to what people are trying to learn?
Yeah, so basically, I think when people pigeonhole themselves into not liking a certain category, a certain varietal, I think it's because they haven't explored the wine world. When I first started drinking, and I was there at one point in my life, you know, in my 20s, when I first started drinking wine, I thought I didn't like white wines. And then going to France, drinking some of their meat, the Chapoutier wines were just mind-blowing. So I think it's just finding the right wine in the right category. And the same thing happened with Italian wines. I used to drink a cheap Chianti. It's not that delicious, to be honest. But once you start exploring Italian wines, the Piedmontese, and you know, even in Chianti, there's some amazing. So it's just being open-minded. That's really what the key is with wine, is don't say you don't like something, because even white wines, you know, there's plenty of sweet white wines that are absolutely amazing. The Tokais, and there's always Chateau Yquem that people referred. But so yeah, don't pigeonhole yourself into saying you don't like something. Just explore.
Yeah, it's good advice. Now I know you've already told me you haven't done a whole lot of interviews, but there's a question I've asked winemakers, and it's a fun one to ask. And it's, what is the question you don't get asked or you haven't been asked, and maybe that's by somebody in a tasting room, that you'd like to be asked? Something you really like to talk about.
I mean, I think that what I like to talk about most is, and what's exciting about wine is that it is farming. It changes year to year. So when people ask me, when people that are not in the industry assume that a winemaker knows everything about wine, I basically tell them that the more you know about wine, the more you realize you really don't know much. It's, every vintage is so different, and I don't think I've had a vintage that's been the same in my career. I honestly think that it's a humbling career. So I think that's what most people don't understand. A lot of winemakers are very sure of themselves and very strong-minded. But I think that really being humble is very important in the industry, because you have to understand you're working with nature. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. Winemaking is not an industrial process. It is to a certain degree, but you're working with Mother Nature, and that's what I think I wish more people understood or asked, was not like, why are you such a great winemaker? And it's like, no, well, I helped the grapes get to an amazing place because it was what Mother Nature gave me. If that makes sense.
No, that's good. That's actually a very good answer, because it is your job to help educate, whether mm-hmm. it be people like me, the media, whether it be people in the tasting room. So going back for our listeners to number one, for tastings, I assume they would do that through the website. And if they want to learn a little bit about you, what is your website?
So it's topelwines.com. Or you can email me at martin@topelwines.com.
You can email the winemaker. That's cool.
Exactly. That's the only email that you can email. So
yeah. So then they would just basically contact you and set up a private tasting.
Exactly.
And I can't, this is the kind of thing you win in a contest. I mean, to have a tasting with a winemaker, especially one who worked in France, I mean, that's really something. That's a great experience. And more importantly for our listeners, a learning experience.
Absolutely.
Huge.
Yeah, we'll be tasting together, and we'll do barrel tastings. We'll go out in the vineyard, which is 15 feet away from the winery. We, you know, if you're lucky, maybe we'll even go for right around the vineyard on our quad. So it's quite an experience there. I think we have the best views also in the Sonel Valley there. Can't beat it.
Mm-hmm. Martin, I really appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you very much, and I wish you success with your upcoming harvest.
Thank you, Ray. I hope to see you again soon.
Oh, you will.
Yeah.
Oh, you will. Learn more by visiting topelwines.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.